Come and gather up your links. All the things you thought were red. Couple things you thought stink. And you sort them all out. Like paper slips in your lap. It's time to lay it down. It's time to record another metaphor.
Well, and one of the reasons we're not podcasting earlier in the day was because I had a finance committee for the Vermont Humanities Council.
Oh, okay.
Which is just like sitting around while somebody breathes into a microphone and somebody else explains a spreadsheet over the sound of other people's heavy breathing while you try to tell everybody how a phone conference works. But, you know, we straightened out the budget and I feel kind of good about that because I know how numbers work. But I thought it was going to be more painful than it was, so I'm actually in a pretty good mood.
Nice. That's excellent.
Yeah. Sometimes things work out.
Yeah. Things like episode 157 of the Metafilter Monthly Podcast with me, Josh Cortex Millard.
And me, Jessamine.
And here we are. And what a natural transition that was.
That was great. You're a true talent, Josh.
I'm a genius in my own mind.
isn't it legend in your own mind?
I don't know. I've just saying words.
Because it's like legend in your own time, and then it's a send-up on that.
Yeah, yeah.
Jessamine explains jokes to you. Hey-o! Usually you explain the jokes to me.
I know. It's a real switcheroo.
Does that have to do with my kangaroo costume from yesterday?
I didn't know you had it. No, I did not know about that.
Oh, my God. So you know that, like, funny meme where it's like, you know, it's a costume, you know, you drove show up at the party in your Babadook costume,
but it's more a wine. It's more of an adult being, you know,
drinking wine. Yeah. Well, we have a trivia night, as you know, and on the Facebook group for the trivia night, they were like, hey, you know, anyone who comes wearing a costume, because, you know, Halloween's fucking day, you know, I'll go out and buy you the candy bar of your choice, right? And like, I'm a 51-year-old woman motivated by candy, and I was like, I also like costumes, right? So I put on my kangaroo outfit and went to the bar, only to find I was the only person in the entire bar in a costume at all.
Oh, man.
And I was wearing a full kangaroo costume.
Yeah.
And you know, it was a good candy bar. But, you know, it's a little funny, right? Like, I don't know if that's like a digital divide problem. I don't know if that's a timing thing. Like, I don't know. Other people don't like costumes. Am I the only person that likes costumes? The rest of my damn team didn't wear them.
Yeah, I don't know. Did you communicate with your team at all about it? Was it like, was that the sort of thing that could even be coordinated ahead of time, or what?
No, my team is not really like, we coordinate enough to know who's going to be at the bar, but like, we don't really, they're not, you know, I think this was probably something that was posted to Instagram, to Facebook, like a couple hours before. And you know, as a result, there's no time. So I was just very surprised. I'll send you a link, 'cause it's sort of funny.
Nice.
But like, if I were younger, I would have been like, oh, God, I'm the only person with a costume. So humiliating. And now I'm like, fuck y'all. I got a candy bar and this costume is comfortable.
That's a good kangaroo costume, too. I like that.
I think so. I you know, somebody was selling it for, you know, not much money on the local buy and sell list. And it's good to have a costume that's comfortable.
Yeah. Fucking A.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess we should say it is in fact Halloween right now as we're recording.
You do Halloween in your neighborhood?
You know what? In principle, yes. In practice, every year, it's when we do turn the light on and have trick or treaters, we get like five of them. Like, we're on a street that's like three blocks long, and it's not one of like the streets that gets big Halloween crowds. So we get very little. We just get the people who are feeling, I guess, more adventurous to go down one of the low loot table seat streets.
Yeah.
So we do it in principle. It's just not much of a thing. Certainly less than like when I was growing up in my parents' neighborhood, like, you know, there was a big roving crowd that seemed like, but it happens in the vicinity. So,
well, and I live on the other side of the road of a heavy Halloween traffic neighborhood. So every year I dress up and go to a friend's house to do candy handout, but I don't think we're doing it this year, and it's raining, and it's been an exhausting week, so I'm not 100% sure this may be my first year of no candy hangout, though I may just go walking around with my friend and her dog, yeah. Einstein.
I think it's okay to, like, you know, I mean, the candy will still get distributed. Like, you are not, like, an, you know, a load supporting beam in the
absolutely
candy
not.
So,
well,
like,
and
give yourself that break.
Used to be at a big house where they'd hand it out, but then they split up, and then he sold the house, and she doesn't really do candy at her house, and my other friend, really good friend, doesn't do candy at her house for various reasons, and so it would just be kind of walking around, which I did last year in the kangaroo outfit, and it was fun, but I don't know, different. So we'll see.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some Metafilter stuff.
Hey!
A couple jobs were posted this month, one of which Catherine M. is looking for some retouching on an old photo, just a old photo that's framed and needs some color correction and retouching maybe. I mean, they're partly saying, hey, I'm not even sure how to precisely describe this because I don't know how to do it. But if that is up your alley, take a look and see if you can help out there. And then on the more large-scale jobby-job front, BDC34 is posting about Cornell looking for a back-end Python developer for the I want to say archive, but it's archive.org, but it's not archive.org. It's ARXIV, that archive.
Archive?
Yeah, it's occurred to me. I've seen this many times before, and I've never once tried to say it out loud. But, you know, they do scientific paper publishing as a, like, well, it says open access platform on the job post. So, yeah, if you are in the Ithaca, New York area and know your Python and want to get into that, check it out. That's the news from jobs.
Yeah, jobs hasn't been getting a lot of traffic. I keep suggesting that people go to jobs to, you know, for their little kind of gig economy type things. And, you know, like I always say, go look at jobs.
Yeah. Yeah, I steer someone there every once in a while. And it's nice when people do have a use for it. So, but what of projects?
Oh, my God, projects. So this project, which is by Cobra, kind of fell in like after we recorded, but before we distributed last time, and I wanted to make sure it did not get ignored. It is the printable, totally real birds of the world 2020, because there's this thing called Inktober, which I don't know that much about, but I guess it's drawing some stuff. And so basically you can print out different birds and a different calendar for every month of 2020, including the headless horse raven and the southwestern turd burglar. I won't ruin it. You can go just look at all the rest of them. But it's cool. I appreciate it. Thank you, Cobra. Yay, birds.
Yeah, that's great. Dobbs posted a real does what it says on the tin project, which is a bunch of pictures of Orange Grove tool sheds and utility boxes in Oliva, Spain.
That is an awful lot of pictures.
It is. It's I don't know, 100 or so, 108 of his favorite from the thousands he took while he was there. And I always like that sort of – I always like a good, like, you know, okay, here's one thing and here is a collection of that thing. And there's something about, like, the weird little mundanity of, like, utility sheds that really works for me in this case. There's something about, like, you know, it's like it's a box. It's a small box with a door and maybe a couple windows. And that's all. And, like, you know, there's only so many
ways
you can do
that. And it serves whatever purpose you need that for.
Yeah. So, like, there's only so many ways that itself can really go. And so, like, looking at a bunch of pictures of it becomes not so much as, like, oh, I sure wonder what a utility shed looks like, but sort of taking in, like, the context and the variation from one to the next as, you know, something that you can see more than if you would – like more than if, like, the individual architectural entity in the foreground was, like, really – genuinely, like, super interesting in its own right. Like, you know, none of these are architectural marvels. They're boxy sheds, you know. And so, like,
a non-US country, which I was intrigued by.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. I like that. It's a sort of thing where it becomes the repetition of the theme and the simplicity of the theme becomes kind of almost a substrate you can sort of wade through to get more of a feel for the everything else involved and the little details that stand out. And I dig it.
Hey, here's a Josh, please explain this to me project. The Emoji Adventure by N. McCoy. So I looked at this. I really liked it. It's got a name that is just the little snake emoji. I clicked around having no idea what I was doing, and I expected the penny to drop at some point, and it didn't. And then I read about it, and I'm still not totally sure I understand it. So over to you, Josh.
You know, for once, I'm just going to have to punt. I did not spend any time with this when it went up. I'm delighted looking at it right now, but I just hadn't spent any time with it. So I'm now clicking around blindly a little bit just to see what happens. I mean, I'm seeing a lot of things that feel like good trappings of the idea of using emoji as both item and descriptor in a adventure game of some sort. There's fighting or running from, I went into a city and there's some rats. I'm going to attack the rats. I'm going to attack the rats.
I found a princess, I think.
There's a sort of Legolas emoji, basically, is my person.
Yeah. So, you know.
I'm delighted with this, but
like. Is that a cat, Josh, or is something wrong in your house?
That, no, that is a cat.
I've
got a rat and a sword in the city, man. That's Bodie McBoatface, who usually is actually pretty well behaved during a podcast, but apparently had something to say. She's being a fucker last night too. This is our adorable tuxedo cat. We have a rambunctious, adorable tuxedo cat, Bodie McBoatface, and then a much chiller, older, shaggy buff cat named Freya. And they're both very good cats, and they're both terrible monsters, depending on the time of day and what's gotten into their brains. Although at this point, Freya is pretty chill, pretty 24/7, actually. And Bodhi is delightful, but also sometimes just isn't getting sufficient attention from the universe, I guess, is all we can figure about it. So, for example, we went to bed last night at midnight or so, and I think I fell asleep about 12:45 or so, because that's when she had finally stopped standing around just fucking meowing in the bedroom, out in the hall, downstairs, back up, quieting up for a couple minutes and then starting up again. What does she want? Who knows? Us to never sleep is one possible answer. Another possible answer is she just wants to be in the bed with us, but is not closing the fucking gap from the floor of the bedroom to the bed, which she can jump onto effortlessly. But she's just not making that connection. Because, if she gets up and gets under the covers, she's out and that's fine until morning. Nothing is going to be a problem at that point. But getting her there, and if you get out of bed and try and pick her up, she's like, oh, we're playing? Okay, I'll dash off. So,
oh, my God.
I didn't get as much sleep as I normally do because of that cat. And that's extremely adorable, and I love her. But, yes, that was her making some noise. I think she's still on whatever the hell she was on last night because she's been kind of talkative today.
You're starting to break up a little, by the way.
Oh, am I?
I don't know if it's your internet or my internet.
I had a brief little bit of robot from you, but just the tiniest bit. Am I still sounding weird or am
nope,
I okay?
No, you sound good now.
Okay. Might have been just a hiccup, I guess. Anyway, enough about my cats. This Emoji Adventure looks fantastic, N. McCoy, and I will spend some time with it sometime soon because I want to figure out what's going on there. That's very up my alley. But I failed to explain. Sorry. I can't help you.
That's fine. And in low number users, back around doing stuff, you remember Rory.
Rory!
Rory is an Australian living in Scotland. He's been traveling around the place. He has put together a bunch of photo galleries on his site, and it looks cool. I'm reminded of PB when PB was, making his own Flickr alternative and kind of wishing I had that now. So that I could get all my stuff. That's what I want for a job. I want someone to be able to get all my stuff off Flickr to put onto some self-hosted location so that I still have my galleries and albums intact. But
I bet you can pay someone to do that.
Well, but I mean, what I want is a tool, right? So
yeah,
not
exactly.
just for me, but for other,
yeah.
other Flickr users, because, you know, you can export all your photos, but it doesn't keep the album information. And
yeah.
I feel like there's got to be a way, but it's outside of not only my capabilities, but my actual ability to want to get that detail with it. You know what I mean? Like, I have other stuff where if I was going to learn to code, I would want to fix these other things first.
Yeah.
But I am interested.
I like this eyeball graffiti dude from the that one photo set.
Eyeball graffiti stuff. Dude.
I just put
yes!
the yeah. Yeah. It's just
or
it's
lady.
Good. Yes. Eyeball graffiti humanoid.
Yeah.
Yes. No, those are great.
Yeah, and you can just kind of click and click and click, and there's a whole bunch of great stuff. If you like looking at kind of – I'm looking at a series of trees and vines and beaches and rocks. And, yeah, Roy's a great photographer, and this is a fun way to experience a whole bunch of photography.
Yeah. There is this one. Beijing Brown has another project up, which is – sort of cataloging 70 years of Chinese music history.
Wow. Okay.
Basically saying, okay, well, you know, there was a really rapid push through sort of catching up on contemporary music history in the last 70 years in China. And it sort of tracks some of the development of China culturally. So sort of a condensation of that into a short list. And yeah.
That's a great project. I was just reading some whippersnapper on Twitter complaining about how blogging is dead. You killed it, you bastards, you know, because social media has kind of killed blogging. And I'm like, you know,
yeah.
No, it hasn't. Like, people still write, you know, one of the things that they were complaining about was the absence of these like single serving sites where people would go into like exquisite detail about their nerd topic. And they were like, people don't do this anymore. They just make threads on Twitter. And I'm like, you know, I don't know what internet you're hanging out on, but the internet I hang out on, people are still doing stuff exactly like this, right?
Yeah.
Where you can like learn an interesting thing. I mean, you read it on Medium. I assume that stuff gets surfaced on Google. I don't know for sure, but I think it does. And this is great. Beijing Brown, you know, keeps it real.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's like, yeah. And there's, you know, there's a whole playlist. You can go sample through them, watch the videos and whatnot. Yeah, no, that's a weird thing. You know, it's like on the one hand, you're both right, basically.
Sure.
Like this stuff is out there, and it's – I really, really like that it's out there, and I really like that, you know, people do interesting, detailed work. And the visibility is like so – the visibility and ubiquity have been so damaged by the way things have changed over time that like, yeah, it's there. And also it doesn't have the same footprint that it used to, and it doesn't have the same cultural expectation that it will be – rebroadcast and shared around the way it used to be. And that does suck like that. I mean, it's a genuine thing.
Right.
Like the nature of how we expect to share and the nature of how we expect to even find or discover or look for content has changed so much,
Well, and one of the things they were talking about was, you know, your ability to build an audience. And I was just kind of like, well, I guess like, it might be that if you're the nerdy person who's really into this thing, but you're not somehow amplifying that through social media channels, people are never going to know that you're that person.
Yeah.
On the other hand, maybe building an audience is overrated. I mean, there was like a brief period of time where you could make money blogging.
Yeah. And I think that's part of it too. It's like, you know, there is the distinction between like blogging as a, you know, mainstream monetizable silo is dead and blogging as something that you can just fucking do anyway because you want to put that information out there. And they are definitely two different things. Like I miss having blogging being more of a part of thing that I do, but like it was never something that I was doing other than just because I wanted to post stuff that I was thinking about or writing in the first place. So whatever.
Right.
I still do that.
I still have a blog.
Yeah.
You know, but it was originally so that my mother would know things were okay when she couldn't get me on the phone. And we've kind of moved well past that. R.I.P.
Yep, that's,
Mom.
That's kinda moved.
And, you know, I still do it for I don't know why. Who even knows? Muscle memory.
Yeah. I have another that's on my I want to get there and just haven't found the time things, which is Mayek wrote up a thing called What Is Your Deal with Carly Rae Jepsen?
Oh, God, about, this is funny. You know. I just read the introduction and I – yeah, you know, I should read this later today because I'm curious.
Yeah, I mean, Carly Rae Jepsen's great, so I'm like, I'm on board already.
But, right. Right. I'm already nodding in agreement, but tell me what you think. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's more stuff, but we got sort of a slow start, so I don't want to go through everything point by point. Go to projects. Check out the other stuff. There's more stuff. Post stuff. If you're making stuff, make stuff and put it on projects.
Hey,
it's great.
Josh, why don't you post your on Ouija book?
I will. That's a good idea. I need to get down and
there's something really satisfying about the super blackness of these pages, too. Like, you just don't see a book where all the pages are all the way black.
Yeah, no, really. I was really pleased by that when I saw it.
I'll have to think. I mean, because that's really the thing, right? Why don't you think about what you could put on projects, right?
Yeah.
I just have been putting up a whole bunch of Washington Senators Library of Congress photographs of the old baseball team from the turn of the last century on Library of Congress. I'm not sure how I could put that on projects, but it has been something I'm working on. You know, as the days get shorter, Jessamine's thoughts turn to Wikipedia.
Yeah, so. I mean, you know, you're organizing some stuff. You know where the content is. You're doing some work on it. Write up something about that and share that because, hey, why not?
Yeah. Hey,
I've been
not?
Doing a bunch of math stuff that I could, like, turn into a blog post maybe instead of a bunch of Twitter threads, and, like, I should throw that up on projects. And
I swear I follow you on Twitter, but I've been missing most of this.
I don't know. Maybe did you mute me at some point because of an annoying thing or something?
I don't use mute, actually, for the most for the most part. I don't know. I'll have to go back around and figure it out.
Yeah.
Eh.
It's just me, you know, drawing stuff, so whatever.
It's drawing, so I did know then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like you mean drawing. Yeah.
Yeah, like graph paper and notes and such.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's talk about Metafilter, the blue.
Okay.
MeFi proper.
Well, first of all, can I just say that I believe I made a post this
did
month.
Did you?
I did.
Did you now?
Yeah, and it's funny. Like, I find that one of my recipes for making a post, a good post, or as far as what I like, like where people are like, oh, that's interesting, and nobody yells at each other or whatever, is if I find out about stuff from some way that has almost nothing to do with the internet. You know what I mean? So like this was my trivia team I talk about. One of the guys on my trivia team is like a mainframe engineer for the state of Vermont. He is not online basically at all, but he reads – you know, some things on the internet, I don't even know what. And so occasionally he'll be like, oh, did you hear about this story? And the answer is usually no. And then the answer is, then I'm usually like, my God, that's amazing. And so in this case, it was essentially something that was a post on Polygon, which is not a sort of blog or whatever the hell it is that I read very often, about a Christian rock band from 35 years ago, stay with me, that encoded a Commodore 64 program on the center. Like, you know how there's that little center thing that'll just play on repeat on a vinyl album?
Yeah.
Encoded a 64 program. And then just this year, this kind of YouTube Commodore 64 enthusiast managed to retrieve it and run it. And so Robin Harbron is the guy who runs this 8-bit show, which is a thing on YouTube, which barely has a blog, but also has a Patreon. And he talks about how he does it. And so if you're somebody who's interested in Christian rock or Commodore 64s or weird transcoding between formats, like, this is going to be your jam. And
nice.
So it was fun. It was like, you know, not a super long thread, but it got all the Commodore 64 people out of the out of the woodwork. And it was a little hard because the Polygon thing, of course, doesn't really link to this guy's stuff. it just, you know, is like, we discovered a thing. And you're just like, bleh. Like, because that's kind of useful. But what I then want to know about is the thing. And there's not a lot of other good information. So I spent some time finding the other stuff. And yeah, it was fun. So
yeah,
I enjoyed making that post on Metafilter about that. And then there was like one or two people who were like, oh, I remember that Christian rock band, which was unexpected, but kind of fun.
There was a this is the fun post, and like it's got a MFI zone aspect to it. So this is a post by CGC373 about a write up from M. Hoy, sort of trying to say, okay, how much of a line can we draw between the sizes of banknote presses in the mid 19th century?
Go on.
And the fact that terminals are 80 by 25 character displays.
What?
It's, you know, I mean, go read the thing because it's a fun sort of romp through some stuff tied together. And there's like, there's some spots that are just kind of like, there's a gap here. Like, no, there's nothing saying that this is what happened, but in the absence of something else, maybe this is the connection because
it's a really interesting guess.
It lines up well. Yeah. And so like I appreciate, I went into the thing. I actually saw it before it ended up on Metafilter, I think, just going around somewhere else. And, you know, I went into it feeling like, is this going to be, hey guys, buckle the fuck up because I'm going to blow your mind with a bunch of really tendentious conclusions that I'm going to curse so you don't think about very hard.
Oh my God, we're so sick of those. Yeah.
And instead, it was much more thoughtfully put out. Like, it was like, hey, here's what I could find. Here's some things that do line up. Here's some hand-wavy answers I got from someone about this. This, I don't know. But it's, you know, it's a possibility, you know. So it has much more of that flavor of
but
sort of working through.
But it's also not somebody who doesn't know shit about history who's like, guys, guess what?
Did you know there used to be a USSR? You know.
Right, exactly. Oh, God.
I was just looking at Wikipedia, and you won't believe what I found out about.
I found this old globe.
Yeah, there used to be a Czechoslovakia. Anyway, so it's nice, but then the thread turns into a bunch of fun, nerdy discussion about punch cards and terminal hardware and software and sort of history tied to that and people talking about their experiences with this or that aspect of it. So there's a bunch of fun sort of computer history nerdery in there as well.
Always a joy. Always a joy.
So it's a good time.
Great. I, more often lately, I think we've talked about this, in general, find good Metafilter posts or find good, like, content that winds up has already been on Metafilter over in Malt Shop. So in this case, it was Cashman, who is Mash Can over on Malt Shop.
No one will ever figure it out.
Too confusing for you. But essentially, it's a really straightforward article for the Players Tribune about like WNBA basketball, and like I'm just not really a basketball person, like, you know, more power to people who love basketball, but it's just, I don't know, not my thing. But basically this was Bradley Beal from the Washington Wizards talking about Cheryl Swoops and Lisa Leslie. I don't remember who exactly. I read it like, you know, weeks ago, basically. But essentially talking about how these women in the WNBA, specifically some of them, like it starts off talking about himself and his mother and et cetera, et cetera. But then talking about these people who are the best players you've ever seen, right? Like how some of these WNBA people are like even more than the Michael Jordan of what they're doing, talking about how the WNBA is really kind of different, talking about how women don't get paid. Like everybody knows, like the female players and the players in the WNBA don't make as much money. But one of the things I didn't know that I learned from this, this article was basically they don't even make like the same percentage of player money. Like this was the comment that I made in the beginning, but basically in the NBA, players in the NBA get 50% of the league's total basketball related income, right? So, like, you play for a team, the league brings in X amount of dollars, the players get 50% of that. In the WNBA, it's freaking 25%. That's so shitty, right? And so basically this is a pro NBA player guy really writing this thing about what makes the WNBA glorious, and at the same time being like, they're getting this total, like, short end of the stick.
Yeah.
Player-wise. And it was fascinating because I don't know that much about it. And the woman who he's talking about who plays for the Mystics, this was before they won the WNBA championship, which then, not that many days after this post went up, the Mystics went on to win the WNBA championship. So that was just cool. Like, a great long-form article written by with a post written by a fan where you learned a thing that made you appreciate something that maybe was not in your appreciation zone before. Very cool.
Nice. I liked this post from AWS17576.
What is that?
About Tarski's.
What is that username? Let me just click through.
AWS17576.
Does that mean something to you?
I think they. It didn't offhand, but I think they mentioned it on their user page or in the thread even.
I think it's not on their user page anymore.
Yeah. I'll have to look sometime.
Okay.
But anyway, the point is...
I'm sorry. Do I just do that every time or just most
it's some portion of time.
so sorry.
It's a post about an interesting math problem and about how finding a solution to that problem involves projecting it into three dimensions, even though it's nominally just a two-dimensional problem that, you know, you're trying to solve something on just a flat plane. And then a collection of a few other problems that you can sort of use a third dimension to solve a planar geometry problem. So it's a fun little roundup of some interesting math stuff with a nice theme. And it's also AWS17576's first post 18 years after they joined the site.
What? Is that a record?
Right?
Is that a
think
record?
I think it is. But I'd have to check. But I think it might be. We've had a few first posts from upwards of 10-year users in the last month or two, and I've really enjoyed seeing that. But this is definitely like vying hard for the podium, at least, if not the gold. So yeah. And a very short thread, just like a few of us being, you know, happy about math, but a big achievement, and hey, nice first post, newbie.
Yeah. Nice job.
I'll just see if I can remember why I think I know what their name is about.
As far as a semi-political post, not really political post, but the Welk, I feel kind of like you could just open a thread on basically every Teen Vogue article and have some pretty interesting conversation about it. But I don't know if you remember a couple weeks ago when Ellen DeGeneres was like, I hang out with George W. Bush. What's the big deal?
Oh, gosh, yes.
And it was really interesting, right? Because I think for a lot of people, depending on where you personally stood, you would get a very different message from Ellen DeGeneres saying that, right?
Yeah.
And so basically Teen Vogue writes a really good article about, you know, not only like, so she said the thing, and then people were making like kind of jokey videos about it, and then the Ellen DeGeneres machine started trying to take down all those videos. You know, people should be able to say whatever they want unless they're making fun of me, a rich lady. And there was just the Welk made a post with two articles, really well done, that turned into a pretty decent, I think, conversation on Metafilter. You know, delving into what exactly is sort of going on with that situation, right? Like, to me, from my particular vantage point, it's like, yeah, well, of course all the fucking mega millionaires are friends with each other. Like, that's how capitalism works. That's what's so stupid about America. But, like, I'm sure everybody sees something different. You know, maybe there's like, well, white people all have to stick together, or like famous people all have to stick together, or whatever the thing is. And so there's two articles kind of looking into, you know, what we can learn, what we know about from that, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was one of those things where like the event itself was enough of an internet sort of media phenomenon. It was like, okay, well, this is going to get to some discussion on the site probably. And so having a actually pretty decent post come together about it rather than like, you know, jumping to, oh, hey, look at this, have an opinion immediately. Let's bring out the takes and having something a little bit, you know, a couple days later and a little bit of thoughtful framing, I think did a lot for it being a kind of interesting discussion, which was nice. So good work, everybody. That worked out okay. I liked this post about the Terminator theme song. WCD Mike made a post about the theme to the original Terminator film.
How does it go? Sorry. Yeah, it gives me arrhythmia.
Yeah. Well, it's in 13:8, I think. 13:4. It's in 13. It's, well, okay, so here's the thing. It is 13:16, I guess, is what people were saying.
No way.
I mean, time signatures, this is a good thread to read because it's an easy thing to argue about, and because people have weird, like, you know, time signatures are fucking weird. Rhythm is fucking weird. We have a very, very strong basis in American and in general Western pop music towards 4/4 and
or
sometimes
3/4
two and six sometimes. But basically, we know 4 and we know 3 and variations on them,
and
that's kind
else.
Of what's familiar. Yeah, like that's 99% of pop music for the last, you know, 100 years. At least is that. And so parsing out more complicated time signatures is not, you know, as easy a skill to come by as you might expect if you were thinking it was a real fundamental part of like music. And that is different in other cultures. Like there's a lot of good discussion in the thread about how folk music in a lot of like Eastern European countries, for example, or in the Middle East, tend to have more complicated time signatures going on just as part of the, like, it's because it's just part of the ongoing folk tradition there.
Yeah, Romanian music, all the kind of, you know, fiddle and whatever stuff, definitely more complicated than.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And part of it is like, you know, 13:16 sounds like a ridiculous thing, right? But really,
I think it
you know,
is.
If you look at the Terminator theme, like, it's three. Plus 3 plus 3 plus 2 plus 2. You can break it down into chunks, and it's much – well, you can – and you'll get there faster than you'll get trying to count 13 anyway. Like, you know, you can sort of break it up into familiar
–
a little bit of waltz, a little bit of straight mash together, you know, and all of a sudden you have something that's built up out of smaller, more digestible parts. But at the same time, it is also just kind of a feel thing at the end of the day. And like, you know, you aren't going to be able to like count everything out all the time. So you kind of need to feel it. And that's part of like getting used to it. You get used to a weird time signature and then it becomes normal. Like people got used to listening to Take 5 from the Brubeck quartet. And you don't hear a lot of 5 in pop music, but you hear more of it than you did before that record came out. Because all of a sudden it's like, oh, right, you know, and Money from Dark Side of the Moon is, you know, in 7/8. And, you know, there's examples out there in pop culture of someone doing something, or Tool does, you know, whatever the fuck they want all the time, time signature wise. But yeah, I don't know. So it was a fun discussion. I enjoyed it. Plus, the theme from Terminator is really good. So it was nice to have that be the thing stuck in my head as a result of whatever was going on.
Well, and I was doing some traveling this month. I briefly went to and from Florida, and I on the plane, I watched Beware of Mr. Baker. Have you seen that?
I do not know that.
It's about Ginger Baker. It's a sort of a documentary about Ginger Baker, but it's now available for free on YouTube. And Ginger Baker, you know, the noted drummer for Cream and a whole bunch of other bands, and just kind of a noted pretty out there dude in a lot of ways. Part of his whole issue was, you know, he was a guy who played in rock and roll bands, but he was very, number one, interested in jazz, and number two, really interested in African music and African drumming, generally speaking. And he actually moved to Africa in his later years. And, you know, he spent a lot of time like in the, I don't know what it was, 70s, 80s, playing with Fela. And doing sort of that kind of like jazzy African drumming. But, you know, listening to him and he was a noted crank in a lot of ways, but listening to him sort of talk about trying to bring more complicated drumming into the world of rock and roll, like, you know, just jazz stuff, number one, and then number two, sort of more African polyrhythms, number two, was just super interesting and gave me more of an appreciation for why people thought he was such a kind of a singular drummer, which I had never really understood. Like, I thought it was just kind of because he was weird and whatever. And it gives you kind of more of an understanding. I went looking to see if Fanfare had a post about it because it, you know, made the rounds a lot more just after he died recently. And no post on Fanfare. But for people who are interested in odd time signatures, that would be another really good thing. Plus, Josh, I mean, for anybody who's interested in music, fascinating. So fascinating.
Cool.
Or any of those sort of weird rock bands of the 70s, 60s, and 70s.
Well, and maybe this is going to turn it into something someone posts about. Who knows? Maybe we're starting something here.
Oh.
Maybe this is like the Velvet Underground of 5-minute segments of the podcast.
It was probably,
I don't know where I'm going with
there
that.
Was probably a Ginger Baker obit, actually, speaking of.
That seems likely.
I'll noodle around in that. Well,
you look at that. I'll talk about a post.
Why don't you do that?
Open. All right. Another post that I enjoyed. Enjoyed is a tricky word for this one because I found it sort of unsettling in its interestingness. But Fizz made a post about it's a YouTube video of a robotic hand solving a Rubik's Cube, and it's solving it one-handed, and it's solving it through neural network training process. So instead of like giving this hand a set of very explicit mechanical instructions on how to manipulate a cube, they basically gave it a cube and told it how to look at the cube using, you know, computer vision, like, you know, analyze images of what's in its hand, and told it what it's trying to get to and said, okay, go for it. You know, and basically did a bunch of training simulation to get it to figure out what kinds of things it could do to cause the cube to manipulate and eventually get around to solving the cube, which it does inconsistently, but it does it. And it has a sort of weird, like, palsied motion to its hand, the way it's constantly
sort of moving in a strange way.
And
it's making me uncomfortable.
I had literally a hard time watching it in a sort of motion sickness sense. Like, it's just, there's a constant movement that, with my eye tracking it and with a camera being fairly close up, like, it was like, yeah, it's, it was really,
well,
like,
there's,
it was
all those lights blinking on the ends of its fingers.
Yeah.
Which also makes it challenging.
So,
wow.
Yeah. It's genuinely interesting to watch, and it's a neat accomplishment. And Fizz links more of an explanation about what's going on inside the thread too. But yeah, I thought it was really neat and also more unsettling than any other robot stuff I've seen in an odd way. Like, it looked more like a sort of parallel organic kind of behavior than, say, a robot dog jumping over an obstacle, as impressive as that is in its own right. You know, that feels like people doing robots. And this looks like a robot figuring out how to do itself.
Learning a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, I mean, and it's not unsettling in a,
Rope's
Basilisk way.
Yeah.
Just in a, like, this is a different looking kind of, like, this is what it looks like when, instead of trying to make the robot do it how we want to instruct it to do it, we say, figure something out. And it turns out it can figure out something other than what we would have tended to describe. And it's always really interesting to see that kind of emergent behavior as part of stuff. You know, this is like a physical, mechanical version of weird deep dream neural network imagery bullshit, where it's like, this is a picture of absolutely nothing and it's kind of terrifying to look at. Well, this is, you know, this is a different domain with the same sort of, like, okay, well, let's let it figure out how to do it without taking in our aesthetics into account in the process. So I thought that was pretty great.
I have found the Ginger Baker obituary, which was hard to find because basically the only two tags on it were music and cream.
All right.
I have added some tags such as obit, obituary, Ginger Baker, and Mr. Baker. But that's the thread if people want to find it. And Steve Eel actually put a link to the YouTube film right up near the beginning, which may have been where I found it. And just a lot of people talking about what made
Maybe Saint Evil? Is it Saint Evil?
Oh, is it?
That sounds very badass and also blasphemous. So now if it's like, no, it's just Stevel, and also, hey, I'm Catholic. Be nice. apologies. So,
oh yeah, it's just some letters from his name. Huh?
Yeah.
Well, good.
Well, that's my headcanon now anyway. I enjoyed this post. Adam Eyes made a post. There's a Twitter account called No Context JTC, which in this case stands for Jack Trick Chacked. Jack.
I got you the first time.
Yeah. Anyway.
Jack Trick Chacked, but I don't know why it's JTC.
I don't know, actually. I can't figure it out. Anyway, the Twitter account just like takes, you know, out of context for like this whole no context thing has been like, that feels like the last year or so, the last 2 years, that's really blown up as a thing that everybody does now. It seems like is start up one-off Twitter accounts that do no context something.
And that's what they're actually called, like no context,
whatever. Yeah. Like you'll see, like I associate it with things like shows. Like I've seen a lot of like no context, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, no context, The Good Place, where it'll be like one line of dialogue subtitled over a still frame of, and like out of context, it's a weird, funny thing, you know, usually. But this is like the same thing, but for chick tracks. And so the person who runs that Twitter account put up a Tumblr blog just with like their 50, I don't know necessarily favorite or not, but like 50 notable sudden horrible deaths in chick tracks, which chick tracks tend to have. And the interesting thing to me, like chick tracks are weird, and they are part of a strange combination of religious kook history and sort of underground comics history. And there's been posts on chick and chick tracks before. It's interesting to me to some extent, like every single time though, like, you know, Jack Chick is dead. These tracks will probably be around for a long time because they'll keep getting published, but they feel like something from a bygone era of pre-internet, you know, weirdo evangelism.
Which they are.
Yeah. You know, so the fact that they still get published, that's one thing, but they're also like, they're a thing that are over and just sort of still hanging on. So more and more, it's going to be the phenomena that people seeing it will be seeing it for the first time. And there's a couple of people in the thread here, like, I'd never heard of these before. And it blows my mind because, like, I learned about these in fucking, like, high school, middle school. Fortunately, not from being seriously evangelized in the process, but, you know, they were around. It's like, oh, yeah, this is. Well, this is fucking chick tracks. So the idea of someone coming across this brand new is always kind of mind blowing and sort of like, wow. I mean, you're in for a weird ride because, like, fundamentally, at the end of the day, everything else is about them aside, they're just fucking terrible. Like, they're
right.
Awful, hateful, shitty underground comics evangelism literature. But what a fucking weird, strange vein of that they are. So,
right.
Anyway. I thought it was interesting to sort of revisit that and hear a mix of people talking about being exposed to this shit as kids and also people like not really knowing about this or only coming across it as adults and the weird history of that whole thing. So, yeah.
Good. I think that may be it for me for Metafilter. Like I said, I was traveling, so was not as interactive as I normally am on that part of the site.
I'll mention a couple more in passing because if I'm going to open the tab, I might as well mention it, but I won't get into either of them. They're just both interesting to look at. One is a post by 3John. Craig Silverman wrote up a thing on how fake ads as like hidden subscription scams basically work.
Oh, my
and
God. So
the history
confused.
Of like a,
what?
Hmm?
What?
You see an ad saying, you won't believe what happened to random celebrity X. And you click on it because like, oh, random celebrity X, I'm interested in that. That's a scandalous bit of news. And it takes you a page that has a like a news article from Fox News or something saying, oh, yeah, random celebrity X was in this situation. Anyway, also, there's this product that they endorse. Click through and buy that. And it's a fake. It's like literal fake news. It's literally a fake mock-up of, say, a Fox News page
saying.
On someone else's website. And it funnels you into like, hey, you can try this exciting product for very cheap or for free or pay for shipping. And you can get this thing for $5. And hey, celebrity likes it. And you like celebrity. So, hey. And then you do that and you get charged your $5 or whatever. But then like, you know, 2 weeks later, you get charged $80. And then every month you get charged $80. And you get the stuff in the mail. They're shipping you actual shitty products. But it's very, very hard to cancel, you know, like
that old scam. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and it's a big write up on some of the history of that and on a specific company doing it, and sort of how that went up and down. And so that was interesting. It's a good read, but I don't really have much else to say other than, hey, it's a good read. And there is also a kind of fun in a dystopian way thread about random number generators being where the how many people are looking at this flight right now type information comes from when you're shopping for a flight. So you go and look at flight and like you're like, oh, okay, yeah, maybe I'll take this flight to New Jersey. Oh, seven people are looking at this flight right now. Well, I better move on this. So this is almost certainly bullshit most of the time you see anything like that. But in one case, it was like very clearly bullshit because a security researcher managed to figure out that it was bullshit in one specific case.
I love it.
So yeah, it's an interesting read and fun discussion too. That was a
long discussion.
Yeah.
A lot of math people in there. That's cool.
So yeah, that's Metafilter. Great. Tell me about Ask Metafilter.
Well, we have to start out with this question by Jether, which is, orca moose predation. How common is this a way for moose to die? Right?
I'm on board. Okay, tell me more.
Well, apparently Jether heard or read this somewhere, saw a factoid, and is like, what? And then people are basically like, no, this is actually not only is it not common, it maybe has only happened once or sometime, or like there was an orca that had moose in its stomach once. What have we learned from that? And so it's a pretty short thread, you know, five answers, four favorites. But there are people sort of talking about, you know, anecdata versus data, and a couple people cite some actual scientific articles. And it's kind of rare that an Ask Metafilter question that asks for numbers backed up by citations actually receives citations. So
yeah.
Yay, team. Go. Also, I enjoyed reading this. It was funny. So thanks, Jenna.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a very good premise, you know. Sorry to the moose involved, but, you know.
If, maybe. Hypothetical moose.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm not any less sorry because it's hypothetical. The moose is real in my heart now. I'm seeing a moose being killed by an orca, whether or not it's ever actually happened. You know,
right. I'm seeing it now, and I hadn't seen it before this day.
Exactly.
Yes. Go on. I can keep on with the Canadian content if you
like. Oh, keep it up. Keep it going then.
Okay. So there was this question, which is from Sky Crashes Down. Basically, sort of a sad story about trying to get this package. And like there was a Kickstarter. It was late. And then we moved. You know, blah, blah, blah. We didn't get the email asking, et cetera, et cetera. Long story short, where's our package? How do we figure it out? And, you know, a whole bunch of people are, you know, kind of like, well, and then basically a couple hours after posting this, the package turned up in the mailbox. And Sky Crashes Down comment was, I choose to believe me posting this made it happen. You can't convince me otherwise. The end.
All right.
Yeah. So glad you got your package.
Yeah. I wanted to mention a post from a couple days ago from a science geek saying, hey, I want to get sort of a spread of music for a winter holiday display. And, you know, try and source that can include, like, you know, Christmas music, but also non-Christmas music. You know, this isn't just like a, hey, it's Christmas, so we're going to do this one specific cultural thing. So basically looking for suggestions on a broader variety of holiday music and potentially, you know, secular music to bring in to the mix. So it's kind of a good, like, get a wide spread of takes to get a good, you know, spread of answers. So that sounds like a nice one to single boost.
I love list generating music.
Yeah.
Music threads. In fact, I may have to add one to my list of things I was going to mention. I'll have to see if it's already in my list. In the meantime, particularly apropos, Aikman. Thank you, Aikman, for putting that in your profile. Aikman's flatmate and them are having a Halloween party built around the theme or the general mood of cursed images. I am putting together menu items. Give me a generally unsettling feel or a certain wrongness, but something that'll still be tasty for the party. I am hoping that Aikman will follow up at some point with what they wound up doing for their party, but there's lots of links to gross-looking food, stuffed mushroom eyeballs, vegan even. Oh, my God. Wow, those are horrifying. And, you know, the like. Kool-Aid pickles, deep-fried fruit, Trader Joe's creamy pink primavera pasta sauce, demon pig. It's good. It's a very good thread.
That's nice.
Yes.
There was, you know, this is a anonymous post, sort of like a difficult discussion. And there was a bunch of good answers in here as a poster basically saying, hey, you know, I found out just now in like, you know, I'm an adult, I'm like 40 or so. And I just found out that when my mom had a liver transplant in high school or junior high, it was not a mysterious illness. It was that she was a serious alcoholic and had gotten cirrhosis from drinking. And this was entirely new to me, and it's changed my whole understanding of a bunch of stuff about my childhood and my relationship
with
my mom.
This was when I was gone. I missed this entirely.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, so interesting.
And so, yeah, so basically, how do I deal with this now? Like, my mom is dead. And I'm just left trying to sort this out after the fact. And a bunch of good answers from people saying, hey, yeah, like that or something structurally similar to that, you know, is something I had to deal with too. And sort of talking about what their experiences were and how they process it after the fact and, you know, how they're still processing it potentially. So, yeah, it was really interesting read, if obviously kind of a heavy one.
And it's probably really complicated. I mean, you know, as someone who had a lifelong alcoholic parent who was alive the whole time, like I would assume the situation Anonymous was in could in some ways be more complicated just because there's got to be a bunch of coulda, shoulda, woulda aspects to it. Like, oh, if I had known that, would I have done something different? Would I have processed something differently in my teenage years, in my childhood? Would it have caused me to form relationships differently, you know, because for me, it was always like, well, given that, you know, my dad had this drinking problem my entire life and that affected this, that, and the other, I can make my choices with intact information, right? I knew it, my sister knew it, my mother knew it, his wife, you know, knew it. Like, you know, it wasn't great, don't get me wrong, but like, you knew it and it was a fact. He knew it, like, it wasn't a secret. And, you know, having this be, I wasn't totally sure from this whether it was a secret versus just a non-known thing, because that really is one of the difficulties with, you know, substance abuse problems or mental illness problems, mental health problems. Because if somebody's got like a physical health problem, in most cases, it's obvious. Like, you know it, right?
Sure.
But if they've got a mental health problem, you might not know it. There's a really interesting Ask Metafilter thread about like, hey, you know, I'm someone who suffers from depression. I'm, you know, might have kids someday. What should I know about that? And, you know, part of the reason that's such an interesting question is because one of the things you have to decide is whether to tell people or not, right? Or how much to tell them. Or if you haven't told people, is that decision going to change when you have children, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're somebody who was just living not knowing this about a parent or somebody who was central to your life, I can imagine that would be really complicated. Like, we always thought my mother had like some mental health problems that never really got dealt with or weren't really sure what they were. You know, that makes my relationship with her in some ways more complicated than my actually more problematic parent, because we just kind of knew what his deal was. You know what I mean? So
yeah, exactly.
This is a very interesting. I'm very interested in. Legs on fire when she walks in the room. She could turn outside. She could run the tune. You grab her head on her dress when she's making a mess.
What else you got?
I have a couple. Like, hey, it's me. Ask Metafilter questions. This one in particular, tonight's NCIS, what is going on? Hey, we tuned into NCIS a little bit late, and I don't understand a couple things that are happening. And so somebody explained in the first two comments what was going on. And then the third person who commented with their user, brand new user, this is a one-time thing, is actually the actress who plays the forensic scientist on NCIS and did not get a best answer for showing up in this thread to explain that thing. And they're never coming back again. And I really think it's a missed opportunity. But it was very funny.
Yeah. No, it's a beautiful
In fact, I hope – I mean, I do want to like – sort of put in another plug for people editing the Metafilter wiki more. I mean, I know it's kind of a hard, like nobody, I don't know, most people really don't like updating wikis, but you know, there's this page called Hey It's Me or Hey That's Me on the wiki, which is just sorry, I'm also looking it up while I'm talking to you. Metafilter Wi-Fi, let's try that again. And those things are fun, right? Like they're fun when the person who's the subject of the thing shows up in a MetaTalk thread or a, you know, Metafilter thread or whatever. So that was one of them, which I enjoyed. And maybe that person should reconsider handing out their best answers. But maybe not. I can't tell you.
To be fair, you know, the answer says, hey, those other two answers are right, and those got best answers. So it's kind of an endorsement of that appearance to, you know, mark as best the two answers that they said.
You're reaching, Josh.
Yeah, well.
And then this question, which is not necessarily me per se, but it's user HTM who has osteoarthritis in their left thumb. And then et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I've been getting cortisone shots. I can't get cortisone shots anymore. Has anybody had this surgery? And I was like, what the hell? My sister got that surgery in her non-dominant thumb this summer. And so she's now, you know, three months into recovery. And I had lots of information, actually, for this person about what their healing path would be like. So that was good. I mean, basically, you know, HTM was a little concerned, like, is this going to cure it or is it just a lot of surgery and then it's just going to come back, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I was just really happy to be able to help because
that's great.
I think the prognosis is good, you know, in a general sense. You know, nobody likes the idea of surgery, especially when, I mean, you know, this one, they relocate the tendons in your arm. Like, it's just ridiculous. But then you just never have the problem anymore. You know, they put a little spongy thing in where this bone used to be, and then you're fixed.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just like, oh, maybe, it's really kind of good. So I was happy to be able to kind of show up and sort of say that.
That's pretty great. I had a couple other that I was going to mention.
It's Hey, That's Me. I'm going to post it into the...
Ah, yes.
I was like, hey, it's me. It doesn't get me anything.
There's a question from Amtho asking for examples of simple solutions that were wrong.
I love this thread.
It's like, again, list generating, but instead of songs, it's like concepts. And it's, you know, it's one of those things where there's a tendency, like it's inherently somewhat subjective, obviously. Like there's a lot of things that like simple but wrong solutions, but also probably in some cases describing them as wrong simply
right.
is also
wrong
not complicated
mean
enough.
Exactly.
But, you know, nonetheless, like, you know, there's a lot to reach there to and say, oh, okay, well, here's something that, is not the simple truth that it was presented as and acted on. and a little bit of discussion of a couple of them. And yeah, no, I thought it was like a, it was an interesting sort of lateral thinking list generator, since like a, there's a lot of conceptual territory you can cover on those grounds.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. It was long by the time I even saw it, but it was actually fun to just read through the whole thing and see what the heck was going on. As far as list generating, this was the one that I was searching for and just tracked down. It's by Hot Chocolate. I really like fun, poppy, feminist songs. Share them. My preferences are boring. I like a good beat, energy, and pop. Happy to listen to anything. Here's some examples. A couple Lizzo songs, a Meghan Trainor song, Lizzo. Taylor Swift song, and a whole bunch of people. Again, they kind of interpret the brief slightly differently. A lot of these songs I didn't know, and it was fun to just go through this whole thread. A lot of these are amazing videos. I am now completely in love with, God, who is it? Some band I'd never heard of before. Oh, sorry. This is good. What was, you, if there's one thing I can't stand, and it's really like one of those, like, you know how some people, they just can't listen to people chewing with their mouth open or chewing gum. It just makes them irrationally angry. You know, like it's not just a preference. They just kind of lose their minds. That's the way I am when people ask questions out loud when they're actually asking the questions of themselves, but they ask the questions using their mouth. You know, what was I looking at? What was I thinking of? What was I? Because I'm like, I'm right here. Like, I can't check my phone if you're talking. Stop talking. But there's some, like, pop band from the UK that now I just can't find at all. Maybe I'll think of it and put it in the podcast thread. Where I just never heard of them. All of their songs that I listen to are amazing. They're super poppy and fun. And their videos are great. Like, very, like, kind of inclusive-y, you know. All kinds of women are super fun women. Like, just, I don't know. The whole thread made me happy, and it was really great. Now it's going to drive me crazy. Little Mix. It's a band called Little Mix.
Okay, and they are just, I don't know either.
Have you heard of them?
Nope.
They've been around forever, and the fact that I have never heard of them, because they are kind of up my alley. Ugh. Ugh.
I did see Eyot Vos's username answering in there, though, which reminded me of another Metafilter post from last month that I thought was cool.
I found another Metafilter post too, so maybe we can have a little Metafilter carve out here.
Well, they'll never stop us. AFOS made a post about a list from Adi Conan. Conan? 20 black punk bands you should listen to, which I have bookmarked as next time I'm doing a dive on music I don't know. And yeah, just remember that in passing. So that's also
great.
Cool.
And speaking of, the post that I was actually thinking of is by the Blue Ollie, which is, this is Ask Metafilter. Classic theme. Let's bring it back around. The classic theme. I can't tell the difference between green and blue anymore. It's gray out. Essentially, it is the Blue Ollie?
I think Ollie.
Ollie? Wants to create an art exhibit of every photograph ever taken of Frederick Douglass, with the link here explains that Frederick Douglass had over 160 portraits of himself taken during his lifetime, because it was a big deal for him. He wanted to acknowledge his humanity. Lots and lots of photographs, you know. And, okay, I want to create an exhibit of every photograph taken. And then Radio Mayonnaise shows up, and he's like, well, how about the book that's linked from the article, Frederick Douglass, an illustrated biography of the 19th century's most American, and Blank Frank? I don't know. Basically links to a webpage called Frederick Douglass Infoset.io, which also has, I believe, every photograph or every known photograph of Frederick Douglass. Pretty
nice.
Pretty cool. Yeah. So, yeah, that was Ask Metafilter. Fuck it.
Yeah.
And then, go on.
I have one other Ask Me to mention.
I have, I think, two more after that.
It's literally my own, but people made some progress, and I'm hoping.
Oh, I love and this come thread. Back around. Josh, so fun and so maddening. So let's go.
The color, the actual, like, regulated, like, federal regulation in the United States color of don't walk signs, whether it says don't walk or has a hand up it's varied over time, is specified as Portland orange. And I don't know where the fuck Portland orange comes from. It came up in conversation that someone had found this in a regulations manual and not explained, of course. Like, why would it say, oh, and that's an interesting aside. No, it's fucking regs.
Right.
So why is it Portland orange? And I did some searching and was not able to find a good answer to that. I looked around in like Google Books and looking through patents, and you can find mentions of it going back to like the late 50s is I think the earliest I actually really concretely antedated it. But none of what I found explained where it came from. They were just calling it that.
I spent a lot of time looking at old newspapers, and one of the things I found, I don't know if I told you this at the time, was that Portland Grange and Portland Orange are essentially the same as far as optical character recognition is concerned.
Yeah,
and
I think you mentioned
Granges
that on Twitter.
Were huge.
Yeah.
Orange?
Yeah.
Not so much.
So that's not so helpful. Yeah, like OCR is definitely a helper and an enemy in this case, because a lot of stuff that would be searchable only because of widespread OCR projects, also they're widespread and they're not going to double check a lot of these things that I'm probably the only person who's looked at in the last couple of years. But some folks in the thread actually did some good further sleuthing. People who are better at like digging through archives than I am, or getting more out of Google Books. So Potch came up with some stuff. Interplanet Janet found a site from a newspaper article saying that it did in fact come from Portland, Oregon. S. Henderson found some more. WCD Mike found some more. And where it is right now is probably the next step, as S. Henderson noted in the last comment in that thread currently, is going to a library and looking through some physical copies of things that have been indexed but not actually like OCR'd and digitized for reading online.
Or asking at the state library.
Yeah, I could try figuring out if there's like a state library and I could pick a brain on it. But yeah. So anyway, that's sort of where it is. It definitely I tapped out my basic internet research skills, turned to Ask Metafilter, didn't get like the light shining down from the sky perfect answer, but got leads. And hopefully I or someone else will be able to find some more on it, because
I'd
really love to get like two
Multnomah
an answer.
Multnomah County Library would have – it's just
–
a librarian should know.
Yeah.
And I say that in that kind of – but I bet they won't. But they should, but they might not.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Try it though.
Anyway, we'll see. We'll see if that goes further.
It's free.
Yep.
All right. I enjoyed Fizz's thread about unique road signs from your neck of the woods.
Oh,
it's a restricted question, right? It's just about signs, road signs, not just like I hung up a sign on the side of my barn that says blah 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 blah, but like road signs.
Yeah.
And so it's because around here we've got like moose crossing and bear crossing. They're not that interesting, but like, you don't see them in a lot of other places. Oh, hey, I got a favorite in this.
Oh man, there's so much in here. I am excited. This is fantastic.
Yeah, because they're, there's all sorts of like, stop for me, it's the claw. That's one of my favorites from Matilda Ben. I remember that from when I lived in Seattle, and I love that it is still a thing. Like, it's just like somebody took a stop for me, it's the law, and then put a C on it, and then drew a little claw on it. In fact, this is a pretty deep cut, because Matilda Ben is actually linking to a blog post from 2005. Oh, what joy, what joy. I totally remember that. And, but yeah, it's just a fun, a fun list of stuff. Oh, that was it for me, because my last one was Ampthos post, which you already mentioned.
All right, then.
I have a couple others. I have a fanfare thing.
Okay, do it.
This was the first time. So I watched Saturday Night Live, for better or worse, and usually Rhizome or someone else makes the Saturday Night Live post. And I like talking about Saturday Night Live because it's a little complicated, right? Like, they have some new people. Michael Che is often a very sort of contentious sort of joke teller. It's, you know, there's interesting questions about his jokes. He made what appeared to be a fairly transphobic joke, or tried to, over the weekend. I wanted to talk to it, Metafilter people, about it. But nobody had made the post yet. So I actually made one of my first fanfare posts with the Saturday Night Live of Chance the Rapper, Chance the Rapper, because he was the both host and musical guest. And there's some really interesting discussion, actually, in this thread. I thought it was interesting, but, you know, other people might have found it aggravating, I'm not sure, about, like, you know, who are some of these jokes for, right? Like, there was one sort of People's Court-y type, type skit called First Impressions Court, where Chance the Rapper is a judge, and he just kind of, people walk in, and he decides all his cases in, like, 18 seconds. Like, you're clearly guilty, right, before anybody opens their mouth. And, like, from my perspective, it seemed like some of it was kind of this punching down stereotype, like he's pointing out kind of the people of color, or the people that appear to have mental illnesses, and being like, you're the one who's wrong. But, like, from other people's perspective, you know, it was making a slightly more subtle joke about, you know, that would be kind of a, you know, black comedian makes jokes for sort of people of color, not for me. And there's some interesting discussion about, like, well, why do you assume all the jokes on Saturday Night Live are made for you? Why do you think you're the target demo? Is Saturday Night Live succeeding or failing if it makes jokes that hit in different ways with different audience members? And it was good to read.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. You guys rolled out some updated site documentation.
Yeah, yeah.
You might want to mention that. I don't know. Maybe you
I'm
don't.
Just cobbling together my meta talk tabs. No, though, so that was a. It's one nice thing from. That's the wrong link.
Josh. let me
try. My tabs are all in a confusion.
I got. I close them as I talk about them.
I do too, but I was lining up the meta talk ones, and they got them in the wrong order and copied the wrong URL bar. Anyway, yes, we a couple weeks ago we put up some significantly revised, or in one case, brand new bunch of site documentation. We reworked the new user page that you hit when you click on sign up if you're not a signed in member of the site, and reworked the join page that comes after that a little bit to try and make those clear about, like, what to actually expect and what sort of, like, the main roadblocks that we see coming up over and over again from brand new people on the site. We rewrote the guidelines to actually be a coherent sort of site guidelines page, because for a long time it's
not just Matt talking
like
about what he liked.
Yeah, what's a good and bad post? Like, there were sort of nods to behavior stuff a little bit on the old guidelines, but it was, like, kind of in passing, but also here's some advice on how to make your post.
Right.
And, you know, people can figure out how to make their post okay. You know, we should talk about, like, behavioral expectations in the internet as it exists right now, and the idea that there are a bunch of things you should be thinking about.
Well, and how it's assumed you're going to treat one another that may be different from maybe how it is on other sites.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, talking about, like, what the behavioral expectations are, and then figuring, you know, if you're having trouble specifically post-formatting, we can work that out later. That's not the most important thing to say about, you know, what the guidelines of the site are. And we wrote up a new page outlining sort of briefly outlining the concept of microaggressions and talking about some of the common microaggressions folks have identified as sort of recurring issues on the site, and given a sort of brief write-up on those to give people an idea that, hey, these are things that actually they happen, they matter, it's a problem that they keep recurring, and, you know, folks need to make themselves aware of them and avoid perpetuating that behavior. And talking more generally, too, about just kind of the impact of having, you know, cultural majority or culturally dominant groups taking up outside space in discussions, and being aware of that if you're a member of one of those dominant groups, so that you can actually do more than just not mean harm and actually make a little bit of an active effort to create space for other folks and let less well-represented and marginalized voices, you know, have some space. So sort of talking through that stuff, which is stuff we've talked about a bunch in MetaTalk and, you know, contextually in threads on the Blue over the years, but putting it somewhere in an organized, referenceable space feels like a good step forward as far as making it clear that these things are explicitly part of you know, what it means to participate on Metafilter rather than something we just sort of talk about in oral tradition.
Well, and you and mods are going to start assuming people are going to stick in line with those expectations a little bit more.
Yeah.
Like, we're gonna start doing things a little differently, not a lot differently, but I mean, in some cases, I'm aware this is just getting in line with how you've already been as mods working.
And like documenting it clearly so people know that that's what the expectations are does matter. Like, it's one thing to say, okay, well, this is stuff we're already trying to focus on, but letting people know outside of just firsthand experience with an instance of us doing it, you know, makes a difference. So,
yeah.
So it feels like a good start. We've got a bunch more we want to do, and we got some good feedback on the details of some of these. That'll let us do some revision passes as we go along. But it's nice. It's nice to have some forward movement on that. There's also on a much smaller scale, but kind of a nice thing to be reminded to revisit. Signal asked about using non-ASCII characters in tags for posts, which is a thing that you haven't been able to do, and something that, like, back when it was last looked at years ago, PB found the situation was that it was going to be very difficult to do it, basically. Things have improved in terms of support in various ways that Frimble would be able to explain much better than me if they were inclined to.
So it's not just a can-do attitude situation?
Hmm?
It's not just a can-do attitude situation?
No. I think it was a can't-do situation before. Reasonably speaking, and it sounds like it's doable now. So Frimble's working on expanding significantly the character sets of Boardable. We can't just throw the gate wide open on every UTF-8 character because there are things that would break.
Well, I remember Fake Matt Howie back in the day, right? UTF-8 characters, you could make usernames that were functionally the same. And you can still do that in URLs. I've seen people like fake apple.com URLs using allowable URL characters, and it's scary, right? Because it looks like apple.com to your eyeballs, but there's actually something slightly different happening with the character encoding.
Yeah. And that's always the trade-off with this sort of thing, is like you have to figure out, like, you know, what's the acceptable amount of hijinks allowed. And like in the text of a comment, you know, it's a behavioral question more than a structural question, but in something that gets used as data like tags do, you know, it becomes more of an issue to control that somewhat. Anyway, good news is it sounds like we will be able to significantly open up the character set supported in tags pretty soon now.
I love it.
Got a work in progress, so that's nice. A couple things to mention as well. Julin, who's done organized a secret Quantzer gift swap for years now, is looking for folks to help take that over because they just do not have the bandwidth right now to do it again this year.
Thanks, Julian. Thanks for all your hard work.
Yeah, it's like it's really, really a fantastic amount of work just for the sake of making this happen as a totally volunteer thing. So passing it on to someone else is an entirely understandable, deserved thing to do. And if you think you might be interested in helping out with that, check out the MetaTalk thread, because I think they've got a pretty good collection of volunteers coming together. But, you know, it is a bunch of work. It's a bunch of work, and having people able and willing to do that is what makes this crazy thing happen every year. So, check it out if that sounds like that is up your alley. And it's Post Your Name Month. There was Post Your Animal Month, last month before, where people were posting posts to the front page about animals that were in their usernames. And so Orange Dinosaur Slide put a post up early in this month in MetaTalk saying, hey, let's do it again, but just your name. So all of us without animals in our names can participate more easily. And people have been doing that. And it is, once again, very enjoyable.
Great. I love it.
And that's about it.
I just wanted to note this post from today. Basically by Progosk. According to Popular Mechanics, which is still a website, and all their old magazines are on the internet, which is cool, Metafilter is one of the 50 sites that, quote, made the internet what it is today, unquote. Kind of nice, and it's just kind of a chatty blah, blah, blah thread. I mostly mention it because, who was it? Oh my God, it's me doing that terrible thing. I am sorry. The second comment is, I feel like Metafilter is one of the sites that has done all it can to prevent the internet from becoming what it is today, which has two completely orthogonal readings. And I read it at first like, and fuck you, Metafilter.
And then, like a big old dunk.
And then I was like, why is it favorited 50 times? This can't – I must be missing something. And then read it again with my charitable glasses and figured out like, oh, right. Most people think the internet of today is garbage. Given that this comment makes total sense. So I appreciated that. Sorry, Skewed. I read your thing wrong. Beginning. And hey, congratulations. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, no, I saw this. I saw this list. I think earlier in the day, yesterday, before it hit MetaTalk, I had seen it just somewhere else, and someone had shared it. It's like, oh, hey, yeah, this is a pretty good list. And I was like, oh, I'll go take a look. I'm curious to see what someone put together there. And like, it's not that I was thinking, you know, this isn't a good list unless Metafilter ends up on it. But like, I got down to Meta. I was like, oh, okay, now you're doing it. Okay, good job, list. Like, I was going to read it with interest anyway, but it was very nice to see Metafilter show up on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
I'm going to do a Metafilter half minute because I got to close out real quick here. But I'm going to mention the songs that will show up.
You have someplace to be?
I do. I do.
Congratulations.
Yeah. No, go me, right? three songs I'm going to feature in the episode. I'll get them edited in Chords and Gourds, which is some nice acoustic stuff from Carrot Adventure. A New Flame, which is from Sredni Vashtar, revisiting an older song from a few years ago. And Invocation, which is a nice kind of driving piano electronica thing from Wolf Dog. So you'll hear those in the episode. And that's the half minutes.
Great. Josh, go do work. It's been so great talking to you.
Likewise.
Thank you
and happy
so
Halloween.
Much for this box of stuff. Thank you to everybody. And
absolutely.
I may
thanks
bug
to Janelle
you
and
for Janelle's address. I'll send her a thank you card.
Yeah.
Thanks, Angela.
Right.
Thanks, everybody. Go do some work.
Yeah, everybody get back to work and thanks. That's
That's the title. Everybody get back to work and thanks.
All right. I'll talk to you next month.
Okay.
All right. Happy Halloween.
You too.